Welcome to Parents' Perspective. And now, 5-year-old Geraldine began, holding 2 dolls in her hands. You'll see what talking back to me will get you. She took 1 doll and used it to slam the other across the room. Think about that, will you? The other doll entered the dollhouse. What is going on? Geraldine's mom stood at the door. Oh, Kim was punishing Maybelle for misbehaving. Geraldine busied herself in the dollhouse kitchen. That was pretty violent punishment, her mother observed. Geraldine looked up, baffled. That's what Eloise's mom did in Daisy's world. Well, I certainly don't agree with that at all, began Geraldine's mom. I think maybe we better watch that show together next time. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about how plugged in our children should be? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is the author of a new book, Unplug Your Kids, A Parent's Guide to Raising Happy, Active, and Well-Adjusted Children in the Digital Age. Dr. David Dutwin is a vice president at Social Science Research Solutions, SSRS, a research scholar for the Institute for Jewish and Community Research, and an adjunct professor for Westchester University. He has taught and lectured on a wide range of topics, including the effects of the mass media and communication research methods. He regularly speaks at conferences on topics including survey research, media research, political research, and health research. He is the father of 5- and 7-year-old sons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Dutwin.
Thank you. Good to be here.
What's the biggest myth about kids' use of media?
Well, I think the biggest myth is, like a lot of communication research, started out in what they call the hypodermic needle age, where scholars thought that you inject a message into somebody and they're persuaded, they've changed in some way. And with children's media, that it started off much the same way, that people thought, well, you know, children watch this television show, they must change immediately in some certain way. But in reality, it's much more of a complicated situation. There are situations where there are significant effects, but there are situations where a lot of it is sort of overblown. And early on, you know, a lot of the early books were really promulgating this sort of totally unplug your kids. Don't let them watch any television whatsoever because, you know, it's going to turn their brain into mush. And then when research kept going, years and years go by, and we realize, you know, that's not necessarily true. There are good things the media can do. There are bad things the media can do. And we have to be a little smarter than to just assume that there's a blanket negative influence going on.
What's the most important advice, then, that you would give to parents who are quite frantic about all this that's going on?
I always put it into 2 categories. For parents with young kids, it is to enforce moderation and to, as your story to begin the episode mentioned, to be side by side with them as much as you possibly can and help them consume media. When you get into older kids, of course, you're not going to be there. They're going to be at their friend's house. They're going to be at the movies. And then the strategy becomes very different. It becomes a strategy of sort of inoculation, that you hopefully have given them the skills in their younger ages so that in their older ages they can go on into life and, you know, see the things they're going to see, sex and violence in movies and et cetera, and be able to digest that without it impacting them in a way that you don't want it to.
We once had a guest who said that she would object more to her children watching things that were gender stereotyped and doing bad things to people because of gender than she would because of violence. And we sort of looked at her and she said, well, the theory is the child's going to have relationships with people of the opposite gender. She's not necessarily going to go out and have street fights.
Sure. And that's one of the stronger effects that have been found in research has been the effect of violent rap and heavy metal music, because that is a type of music where there is a particular negative idealization of women, you know, stereotypically putting them in a role that's subservient, and people compare heavy listeners of that kind of music to other kinds of music and try and control for all sorts of other factors that might explain the difference. Nevertheless, the people who listen to that kind of music are more typically branding women in a subservient role in society.
In your book, Unplug Your Kids, you focus on preschoolers, elementary school age children, and preteens. What parental concerns cross all three age groups?
The thing that crosses all age groups is use, getting back to moderation. When you look at any particular media, be it video games or television, and internet use especially as well, the one concern that spans all of those types of media is the concern of overuse. People get addicted to video games. People get addicted to internet browsing such that at the end of the day, they're spending undue number of hours of their life consuming media. And especially when you put all brands of media together, you know, you're spending an hour doing this and an hour doing that and an hour doing that, and all of a sudden you're spending 5 hours a day watching TV or browsing the internet. You know, that can be a concern no matter what age group you're talking about.
Beginning with preschoolers, what would you recommend about computer use for children this young?
The good news about preschoolers is that most of the software that's out there is fairly educational. And as well, one thing I like about early computer use is that kids can't do it alone. You know, they have to have the parent help them to get started, to explain, even initially how to use a mouse. You know, they can't do it themselves. And so there's a requirement for parental interaction. And again, as probably a theme throughout today's show, you know, interaction is always a good thing. Preschool software, again, tends to be very educational. There's research showing that it does improve character recognition and what's called pro-social behavior, which is, you know, behavior that will be good in a society where they have to deal with lots of other people in their life. And so I think, you know, the more you can encourage computer use at an early age, it's really sort of the one area of media research where there's no established negative effect. You know, I definitely encourage it.
What about television and preschoolers?
To jump just a little bit before preschoolers, you know, the important thing, there is a fair amount of research documenting potentially negative effects for kids under two of watching television at all. It's still an area where, you know, again, alluding to the fact that it's really hard to research a one-year-old and what kind of effect media has on a one-year-old. There's still a lot to be done in this area of research. But, you know, all points are showing that there's probably more harm than good cognitively. Kids of that age are just not ready to be able to absorb any kind of educational message that a medium like television can provide. But getting into preschool, you know, there's a couple of things to look out for. The first thing is parents have to learn to distinguish between educational and non-educational television. Educational television, and typically you don't have to have an advanced degree to do this. You have to watch the shows. You have to ask yourself, is there a moral? Is there a lesson being told here? Are there specific goals in terms of reading, again, character recognition, pro-social behavior, as compared to television shows that have violent content, are more geared toward the characters in the sense of a, you know, a Power Ranger or comic book sort of programming? Another thing that's, I think, really important to consider at a preschool age, been fairly interesting to me, is pace. When you think back to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, for example, you have a show that is in real time. Things are unfolding in real time. When you cut to some of the more modern cartoons, you have shows that cut really fast, and time gets segmented, and all of us, and the action is very, very fast paced. And the research shows that kids have a much harder time with that. There's a possibility it can contribute to hyperactivity. And, you know, even Sesame Street years ago purposefully slowed their content down because of this research. They felt that they were actually having too many segments of the show that were too fast-paced, some of the cartoons that were in there and such. So they purposely slowed it down. So that's another thing for parents to look for. And the last thing I would say, again, is just interactivity. You know, if there's one clear thing in the research on television and preschoolers is that they may learn a little when they're sitting there by themselves, but they will learn a heck of a lot more when the parent is there interacting with them, taking time to talk to them about what they've seen. There's no doubt in the research that when parents interact with television with the child does learn. So that's a really important thing for parents to keep in mind.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on Plugged In Kids.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. David Dutwin about finding the balance between depriving kids of technology and raising plugged-in kids. During the elementary school years, is it to a child's advantage to learn computer skills, or does it not matter?
This is an area where research is catching up to reality. You know, computer use exploded so quickly. 5 years ago, there was almost no schools in the land that where they would entertain giving laptops out to every single student. Nowadays, there's an awful lot of schools where literally every student has a laptop. And so the research was sort of a little bit blindsided by how quickly computers were integrated into education and is sort of catching up in terms of trying to figure out, you know, what's good and what's bad about it. To take a larger view, computers are going to be an essential part of children's lives for the rest of their lives. There's no going back to an age where interactivity and the types of interactions that computers require are not going to be required. And in fact, you know, it's an interesting debate, a debate I've had with a couple of different colleagues and scholars, that there's this research showing that computer use leads to us not being able to focus on a single task at one time for a long amount of time. Especially when you get into beyond computer use, you have kids who, you know, they're texting with one hand and, you know, working on a computer on the other hand and watching a show with their eyes, you know, all at the same time. And the initial concern again is, gosh, that must be bad for kids. It may be, but at the same time, to offer sort of the devil's advocate view, we live in a multitasking world. You know, when I go to work, I literally get 200 emails a day at my job. You know, I literally have 5 different projects that all are at a certain stage of development and production, research projects that I work on. So, you know, argumentatively, it may be a good thing for kids to develop multitasking skills at an earlier age, because arguably they may be more successful in a society that demands so much multitasking. Then again, that we just don't know. But I have seen a lot of articles that say, you know, starting computers really early, encouraging technology use by very young kids is going to be bad because it's going to contribute to this ability to not be able to focus. And I think that the jury's still out on that. A lot of researchers are investigating that right now, but there's really no clear trend about whether it's necessarily a good or a bad thing.
Dr. Dutwin, what about television viewing for older kids? Exactly what kinds of things would you consider appropriate?
Nowadays, we've had an increasing trend. There's been a couple of researchers, the Annenberg School, the University of Pennsylvania, has done some really good work on this, where they've looked at violence and sexual content over time. And as you would expect, it's a pretty interesting curve, and it's straight, and it's going up. So alluding again to this concept of inoculation, it's very difficult for parents of a 13-year-old to control what content they may be exposed to. They may be able to control it in their own homes, and I encourage in the book, and I encourage parents listening to understand TV ratings, to understand video game ratings as well, to utilize parental controls on their systems. But that's not gonna stop the flood, you know, of sex and violence that they're gonna see on television and in the movies. So again, I think the important thing is to read the book, you know, understand the issues and try and inoculate. I mean, getting back to this notion of how women are treated in media, and not just women, but racial stereotypes and other sorts of stereotypes. If a parent sits down and talks to their kid about, you know, they're watching, they happen to catch an element of a show where they feel like women are being stereotyped in a negative light, to sit down and explain, you know, what that show is doing, to have a conversation with kids. I always say, you know, there's an opportunity every time you see something bad in media. It's the opportunity to connect with your kid, to talk to them about what they just saw or heard, and be able to put it into a larger context. And so I think when it comes to television and movies as well, for older kids, that's really the key, is for you to teach them some level of media literacy. And beyond sex and violence, also advertising, you know, the ability of advertising to affect people. There's a lot of research showing that people who are taught media literacy are able to deal with advertising much better. So what does media literacy mean? Well, in a very general sense, it means being able to think about what you're seeing and critique it, to be able to understand, for example, in advertising, what are they trying to sell here? How are they trying to sell it? To be able to not take the arguments of an advertisement on their face, take them for granted, but to be able to immediately say to yourself, what's the problem with this argument here? What are they not telling me? In what way could this argument about why I should buy this brand of X wrong or flawed in some way? And it takes practice to get to a point where you're automatically asking yourself that every time you see an advertisement, or even in a larger society, you know, hear a politician make an argument to support or oppose something, you know, to be able to immediately start thinking through, you know, why should I believe that or disbelieve that is an important thing. And I think if the more parents can sort of have these discussions with their kids early on, it allows them to then go out into the real world and consume television in a way where it's not, you know, they're going to see sex, they're going to see violence, but it's not going to have a negative impact as it would for someone who doesn't have that sort of skill set in them already.
Is there a threshold developmental stage where you can do that? I'm thinking of three-year-olds who are not going to be able to get that advertisement as trying to sell them something.
Yeah.
Is there a stage where we can say, all right, we can get started?
Right. And in fact, you're absolutely right. The research on advertising shows that, you know, 2 and 3 and even 4-year-olds, you just can't even explain to them the concept of trying to sell you something. So, you know, I think once kids, depending on their development, somewhere between 5 and 7, they start understanding what money is and what it does in the world. That's sort of a prerequisite to then understand advertising, because advertising inherently is trying to sell something. And, well, what does it mean to sell? Well, you have to sort of understand what money does in the world first. So really, that's about the age where you can start having those conversations.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on plugged-in kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. David Dutwin about finding the balance between depriving kids of technology and raising plugged-in kids.
How can parents effectively control the media? I think that's a bad word.
Yeah, yeah.
And computer use for their preteens.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of, they're out of the house. They haven't been allowed to watch X in the house. But boy, when they're at Johnny's house, no problem.
Actually, let's talk about in the house for a second. With computers and as well with television, you know, one of the most important things I can say to parents is that I would personally say, if they have a child who has yet to even graduate high school, from 0 to 18, if there's a television in that child's room, it really doesn't belong there. And of course, if they're already 16 years old, you're probably going to have a big fight if you take it out at this point. But the number one predictor of heavy media use is having a television in the room. With regard to internet use and computers, obviously, same sort of situation. If at all possible, try and have a public space. You know, we think about homework. And when people put in their mind's eye, what's your image of homework? It's sitting at the dining room table, right? Like mom and dad are making dinner and the kids are sitting there, you know, in the room next door or in the same room doing homework. Well, the computer should be treated essentially the same way. The computer should be in a spot where you can have public engagement with the family, where it's open so that mom and dad may walk by at any moment. That's going to curtail, you know, the browsing of websites you don't want them to be browsing much more effectively. You know, if they have a computer in their room, they can be browsing up until, you know, you're asleep and they're still browsing. So that's the first thing. Outside of the home, of course, you get in the same sort of situation where there's almost no control. The only real advice I can provide is to talk to your children and ask them questions about, you know, understand what your kid does every day. You know, and if they went to Johnny's house and they said, oh, well, we played on the computer. Well, what'd you do on the computer? You know, and just have conversations, try and communicate. So at least you understand, you know, at least you think you understand what they did. But it's very difficult. You know, kids are going to anywhere from tell the truth to white lie to bald-faced lie about how they behave outside of the home. And you know, I think it's a challenge of every parent to weed through whether your kid is being honest with you or not. Just trying to communicate and have an open relationship as much as possible allows the possibility that your kid will come home and talk to you about what they might have done at other people's houses. So.
You mentioned advertising a little bit ago, and I'm just curious if you could talk a little about the effects on children of mm-hmm. all ages. When they see advertising, what happens?
For younger ages, and again, when we get in this age range from 3 to 7, and you have this problem of they want everything, right? And they see commercials and I want that and I want that. And again, it's an opportunity to explain whether you like it or not. You know, it's not like we're going to want to buy, you know, everything that their kid says, I want that on the television. So it's an opportunity to sort of explain why they're not going to get the things that they want. So, but that's really, you know, with advertising, the first step is again, getting them to understand the nature of advertising, why they're being persuaded to sell things. In older age groups, it's sort of the same boat in terms of teaching them, you know, this media literacy to be able to inoculate themselves from getting too fixated. I keep thinking back to, you know, the one of the more famous Bernstein Bears book, The Case of the Gimmies, you know, and that's
so that's
really. It's cropped up a couple of times in my own household where, you know, there's a commercial and you hear like, Mom, Dad, come here, quick. And you think like someone got hurt or something. And then you run into the room and they're just like, yeah, I want that. You know, see what's on the TV right now. I want. And it's like, you know, my God, I came running down the stairs. And, you know, so we've had in our own household, you know, some conversations started and where I've actually referenced the book and like, remember that book? You know, you have to understand how the world works here. You know, everybody wants you to buy everything that you know, they're trying to sell, and you have to have some control. And it's hard. You know, it's advertising is a particularly hard thing to tackle, I think, for kids, especially at a younger age.
It's interesting. I would think a great project for maybe a fourth grade class would be to have teams of kids work together and each team of two or three kids create an ad mm-hmm. and let the rest of the class critique it.
Yeah.
See what it is they're using to try to get people to buy whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because I've taught media effects class in college, and even in college, you know, I'll bring in advertisements and we'll watch them and we'll have a class discussion about what's going on here. And I'm always struck that the first couple of ads, there's sort of crickets in the classroom. You know, people are not, they're so poorly equipped to be able to critique advertisements, even by the time they get to college, that they can watch an ad 3 or 4 times in a row and I still find myself really having a hard time pushing college students to really understand and see and open up in a discussion talking about the strategy behind the ad and why did they make this argument and not that argument, and why did they pick that music in the background and not different music, and why does that advertisement have this particular color scheme and not a different color scheme? You know, because every little element of an ad is designed for a specific purpose, and that is to sell the product the ad is, you know, is trying to sell. You know, when college students are struggling and engaging in that type of conversation, at least initially, you have to, it makes you realize just how ill-equipped, you know, elementary kids are, you know, and to understand that the average child, you know, literally watches thousands upon thousands of advertisements a year on television, exposed to another many thousands of advertisements just driving, seeing billboards and bus sides and whatnot. You know, the amount of exposure is tremendous. So it's not something that parents should underestimate as a sort of a minor topic in the whole topic of media effects.
Dr. Dutwin, in addition to your book, Unplug Your Kids, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more about some of the issues we've been discussing?
I actually am not going to give a long list. I'll focus on one particular resource. CommonSenseMedia.org is a really good website. It's a website that is designed to basically review every video game, movie, television series, a lot of internet for kids, and basically provide parents with the bottom line of what's good, what's bad for each particular show.
Dr. David Dutwin, thank you so very much for being with us and helping us to demystify some of the issues of media and screen time with our children.
Sure, my pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. David Dutwin's book, Unplug Your Kids, A Parent's Guide to Raising Happy, Active, and Well-Adjusted Children in the Digital Age. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 469 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. Or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Adele M. Thomas Charitable Foundation. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt. Mm-hmm.